Police officer Ricky Orlowski was on patrol about 5 o'clock on March 11th when he noticed a minivan with Illinois license plate parked on a secluded street near a church and a school. It's not a real normal place for someone to sit and hang out, Orlowski said. The officer pulled the vehicle over when he saw that it didn't have working brake lights. For Bart Ross, a lonely man, gripped by depression, rage, and paranoia, this was the last straw. As the officer approached the van, Ross shot himself in the head. Police found a suicide note inside the van. Ross claimed responsibility for the murders of a judge's husband and mother. He justified his actions by saying that the judge's decision to dismiss his medical malpractice lawsuit against him had cost him everything. The doctor's troubles began many years earlier as a result of being a heavy smoker. He had previously received the treatment for cancer of the mouth. The surgery had removed part of his jawbone, and the radiation treatment saved his life. However, the treatment left him disfigured. Frustrated, depressed, and feeling alone. In a search for someone to blame, Ross began a journey through the court systems. As case after case was thrown out of court, Ross became more depressed, more angry. His behavior increasingly became more erratic. Ross felt so alone. His bills continued to mount. He faced eviction from the house that he once owned, and he had to begin renting. He could not find anyone to care for his pets. About the same time, his neighbors said they no longer saw Ross walking his dog or sitting on the porch smoking. Since February 14th, 2005, I lived in my car moving around, Ross wrote in a note to a television station. And when I got numb enough to care about nothing, I finally did it. A man opened fire with a handgun at a church service in a Wisconsin hotel on Saturday, killing 7 people and wounding 4 before taking his own life. The unidentified 45-year-old shooter was either a member or somehow affiliated with the church. What prompted the violence at this time, we do not know. We can only imagine. Hurt, frustration, despondence, a sense of hopelessness and failure. Failure of self and those around him. We hear stories like this from the news headlines almost daily. These are stories of lost and hurting souls in pain. Stories that in some sense we can understand and relate to. Most of us at some time or another have faced life struggles and frustrations. We have become exhausted, weary, burned out, anxious, despondent, and depressed. The very depths of our souls have ached with pain, loneliness, frustration, and depression. Even seemingly strong persons of God on the pinnacle of success face these feelings. Elijah was called by God to minister to the people of Israel 900 years before Jesus. The people of Israel were threatening to replace the true God with the pagan god Baal. Elijah had been called by God to stand in the gap at that critical hour to preserve the faith. On Mount Carmel, Elijah had faced 450 prophets in a duel to the finish. Each side had prepared a sacrifice to their God and then called on their God to send fire down to burn up the offering. And the prophets of Baal called on their God all morning. They were shouting. They were dancing wildly. And Elijah mocked them. You will have to yell louder. For surely he is a God. Perhaps he's in deep thought. Maybe he's busy. Maybe he's away on a trip or he's asleep and needs to be awakened. They shouted louder. They cut themselves with knives and swords until the blood gushed. But no fire rained down. Elijah prepared his offering. He piled wood on the altar. He laid the bowl upon it. And then he soaked the altar with water until the offering was sitting in a pool of water. After that, Elijah walked up to the altar and prayed. And immediately, the fire of God flashed from the heavens and burnt the bowl, the wood, the altar, and the dust around it. The people then had contempt for the prophets of Baal. Elijah told the people to seize the prophets and kill all of them. Elijah's God, the one true living God, was victorious. Elijah was so spiritually elated, he was so pumped up that he pulled a Forrest Gump. 1 Kings 18:46 says that Elijah outran the horse-drawn chariots to the capital city of Jezreel to spread the news of the victory. The only problem was the king and the queen at that time were Ahab and Jezebel. The Bible tells us that Ahab did more evil and did more to provoke the anger of the Lord, the God of Israel, than all the kings before him. Jezebel was known as an evil, wicked woman who brought Baal worship to Israel. And she was the real power behind the throne of terror. When she heard what Elijah had done, she put a contract out on his life. The joy of success that Elijah had been riding on came crashing down on him suddenly. The victorious prophet became so anxious, so panicked, that he ran all day into the wilderness, glancing over his shoulder occasionally to see if Jezebel's soldiers were in hot pursuit. The further he ran, the deeper his fear and depression drove him. And when we finally give in to our anxiety, and when we begin to panic, it's like a runaway train. It's hard to bring it under control. Elijah, the man of God in his day, was now so far down in the depths of depression, he had to look up to tie his shoes. Elijah was struck in emotional overdrive. He was driven, fatigued, tired, exhausted, weary, burned out, anxious, feeling like a failure, and running on empty. Compounding his problems, verse 3 tells us that he even ran away from his companion, who had always been by his side, and now he was trying to go it alone. One of the great dangers of depression and despondence is the tendency to turn inward. Let's admit something this morning. Many of us do the same thing. When we are hurting, we withdraw from others. Instead of reaching out, we pull into our shell and we wonder why we feel so alone. And I know some of you are probably going through some pretty incredibly difficult times. Like Elijah, you may feel like giving up, that you have no more to give. You may feel as though you have tried to do the right thing, but you just do not get anywhere. You feel like you are all alone. Even God seems so distant. But before you throw in the towel, I want you to look at Elijah and see how God brought him through the pain and healed his soul. Elijah ran until he could run no more. And he collapsed under a broom tree in the middle of the desert wilderness. He prayed, "Lord, I've had enough." Now that just about sums it up, doesn't it? Death seemed better, the alternative of what Elijah had been going through. Notice God's response. He didn't chastise Elijah. He didn't tell him to get over it. He didn't shake a disappointing finger at him and tell him, "Get a hold of yourself, Elijah. This is a sinful attitude." Where's your faith, man? In answer to Elijah's prayer, God just let him sleep. Then God's angels brought him a cake of bread. The angel gave him bread and water and let him sleep some more. The first step to healing your soul is taking care of your physical body. We need to stop the treadmill of life and get off. We need to take time to rest. We need to take time to feed and to nourish our body. And sometimes that even means seeing a doctor or getting psychotherapy. And there is no shame in depression. It is a very real problem. Psychiatrists say that depression is the most common emotional problem in America. And it's been risen to epidemic proportions in the nation. And not one of us is immune. It is not a willful chosen state of mind, nor is it a sin. It is a signal that something is wrong and that we need help. It is a signal that we need hope. Some of the most sensitive people have suffered from depression. People like Beethoven and Tchaikovsky, Tolstoy, and Abraham Hamilton. Winston Churchill waged a lifelong battle against depression, and he called it my black dog. Even the great Protestant minister and reformer, Martin Luther, got depressed. Once he said, for more than a week, I was close to the gates of hell and death. I trembled in all my members. Christ was wholly lost to me. I was shaken by depression and blasphemy of God. Depression is very real. It cannot be dealt with by just telling someone to cheer up. And I'm sure that we've all seen that poster that says, they said to me, cheer up and things will get worse. So I cheered up and sure enough, things got worse. When you find yourself in the pits of despondency, get some rest. Take care of yourself physically. It does not sound like the most spiritual of solutions, but God used it to begin Elijah's journey back to confidence. Next, take time to rediscover God. After Elijah had rested, God sent him back to his roots. He sent him back to the mountain where Moses received the Ten Commandments. He sent him back to the place of his heritage, back to his old church, if you will. Be aware that it took Elijah 40 days and nights to get there. Now, this is important to know. The mountains were not that far away. But when you are that lost in despair, it takes some time to journey out of it. Elijah's recovery was not a quick one, and your recovery will not be a quick fix. Once Elijah arrived, he went into a cave where he slept some more. God then called to him, Elijah, what are you doing here? Twice, God asked him, what are you doing here? God knew where Elijah was, and God knew what Elijah was doing. But you see, God wanted Elijah to tell him about it. That's the next step to recovery. Tell God all about what is going on in your life. Remember God's power and his might. Go out and stand before me on a mountain, the Lord told Elijah. And a violent rushing wind then swept across the ridges, roaring through the canyons and over the mountains. But God was not in the wind. An eerie earthquake then ripped through the land, causing gigantic rock slides and rumbling from the depths of the earth. But God was not in the earthquake. A raging, ferocious fire threatened to consume everything around Elijah. But God was not in the fire. And then it happened. In the still quiet of the moment, the whisper of God came. The contrast between the noise and the silence was uncanny and unsettling, and it got Elijah's attention. If we want to rediscover God, it is important to emotionally downshift. We need to remove some of the noise and the clutter from our lives. God is hard to hear when we are so inundated with the very things that drive us to the depths of despair. When we are so busy moving that we do not have time for God, stop and listen for the small, still voice of God. He will lead you out of your cave. He will lead you out of the hole that you have dug yourself into. The voice of God will come to you in the most holy of places, like the mountain where the Ten Commandments were given, in a church, when you're reading your Bible or doing your daily devotional. God will show you the way out of your current predicament, but it will probably not be in the way that you expect it to happen. If you read verses 15 through 17 of 1 Kings 19, we read, "The Lord said to him, 'Go back the way you came and go to the desert of Damascus. When you get there, anoint Hazael, king over Aram, and anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, king over Israel. And anoint Elijah, son of Shaphat, over Abel," yeah, the last name, Melhel, "to succeed you as prophet. Jehu will put to death any who escaped the sword of Hazael, and Elijah will put to death any who escaped the sword of Jehu." God led Elijah out of his anguish and out of his misery by giving him an orientation of others. God did not fix Elijah's problem. He did not make Ahab and Jezebel disappear into thin air. He did not even send armies against them. The death warrant for Elijah still existed. Instead, God told him to quit focusing on himself and start looking out for others. Get back to the work of God. When we forget our own worries and we get interested in others, in helping others with their needs, we will snap out of our discouragement. During a lecture on mental health, someone once asked Carl Menninger, who was a nationally renowned psychiatrist, "What would you advise a person to do if they felt a nervous breakdown coming on?" Now, most people thought he would say, "See a psychiatrist immediately." But he did not. Much to everyone's astonishment, Dr. Menninger replied, "Lock up your house, go across the railroad tracks, find somebody in need, and help that person." To overcome discouragement, do not focus on yourself. Get involved in the lives of other people. When you are discouraged, beaten, frustrated, down in the dumps, depressed, and you are all ready to tell the world, "I've had enough," stop and rest. Take care of your physical need. Rediscover God. Remember His power and might. And listen to the stillness of His voice and develop an attitude of otherness. During the first part of the 20th century, J.C. Penney, who was a real man, presided over a very real and a very large empire of almost 1,700 stores that at the time he was the country's largest owner of a chain of department stores. Each one had his name. Although his enterprise made him incredibly wealthy, J.C. Penney's life was not empty of setbacks and troubles. In fact, beginning in 1929, events took place that nearly cost Penney his life. When the Great Depression struck the country, it came at a time of great financial vulnerability for Penney. Now, in the good times before the Depression, Penney had overextended himself and had borrowed heavily to finance many of his adventures. But when the Depression hit, the banks began to request repayment of his loans sooner than he had anticipated. And suddenly, the cash flow was tight. Penney was finding it difficult to meet payment schedules. Constant and relentless worries began to take a toll. "I was so harassed with worries that I could not sleep, and I developed an extremely painful ailment," he wrote. Concerned about his deteriorating health, Penny checked himself into the Kellogg Sanitarium at Battle Creek, Michigan, and that was the Mayo Clinic of the day. There, Dr. Elmo Edelston, a staff physician, examined Penny, declaring that he was extremely ill. Penny later recalled, a rigid treatment was prescribed, but nothing helped. He was constantly tormented by periods of hopelessness and despair. His very will to live was rapidly eroding. I got weaker day by day. I was broken, nervously and physically, filled with despair, unable to even see a ray of hope. I had nothing to live for. I felt that I did not have a friend left in the world. I felt that even my family had turned against me. And alarmed by his rapidly deteriorating condition, Dr. Edelston gave Penny a sedative. However, the effect quickly wore off. Penny awakened with the conviction that he was living the last night of his life. Getting out of bed, I wrote farewell letters to my wife and to my son, saying that I did not expect to be alive at dawn. Penny woke up the next morning, surprised to be alive. Making his way down the hallway of the hospital, he heard singing coming from a little chapel where devotional services were held each morning. The words of the hymn he heard being sung spoke deeply to him, and going into the chapel, he listened to the singing, the reading of the scripture lesson, and the prayer. Suddenly, something happened, he said. I cannot explain it. I can only call it a miracle. I felt as I had been instantly lifted out of the darkness of a dungeon and into a warm, brilliant sunlight. I felt as if I had been transported from hell to paradise. I felt the power of God as I had never felt it before. In a life-transforming instant, Penny knew that God, with his love, was there to help. From that day to this, my life has been free from worry, he declared. The most dramatic and glorious 20 minutes of my life were those I spent in that chapel that morning. The words from the hymn that spoke so eloquently and miraculously to J.C. Penney were these. Be not dismayed, whate'er betide, God will take care of you. Beneath his wings of love abide, God will take care of you. God will take care of you through every day or all the way. He will take care of you. God will take care of you.